G'day folks, and welcome to Stick With It, APA's podcast for its pilots. Today I'm joined by APA's Head of Legal, Matt Warburton. We're going to spend some time today discussing the Fair Work Commission and what intractable bargaining is, and giving you a bit of an in-depth idea of the pros and cons and considerations if APA was to go down the pathway of Fair Work Commission. Now, Matt, before we sort of get into the conversation, I'm interested if you can give our listeners some information about your legal background before you joined APA.
Sure. So I've been practicing law, and in particular industrial relations law and employment law, for over 20 years now. Prior to being a lawyer, I was an industrial officer for a trade union for 10 years prior to that. So all up, 30 years of IR. But during my career, I've acted for corporations and employers as well as unions. I started with unions, spent most of my career working for corporates, and I've now come back to where my heart is, which is working for a union.
Oh, well, it's good to have you on the team. Now, in terms of the Fair Work Commission, can you give us a bit of a synopsis as to what it is and who's involved with the Fair Work Commission?
Sure. So, look, the Fair Work Commission is a statutory body that has been established by legislation to effectively perform many of the functions under the Fair Work Act. Now, in reality, what does that mean? Or relevantly for APA, what does that mean? Well, the Fair Work Commission is there as a statutory body that can assist us. It certainly can provide conciliation and mediation services for us. That includes if there's a dispute around bargaining. Sometimes it can determine grievances or disputes between the parties. And in relation to bargaining, it can either APA or Qantas can make an application to the Fair Work Commission, and that application would be for an intractable bargaining declaration. And it, providing for certain steps are met, then the Fair Work Commission can arbitrate the disagreement between the parties if all the steps are met.
Now, I know there's been changes to the legislation regarding intractable bargaining in the Fair Work Commission. Mm. Now, do we have many examples of case law or precedents yet to give us some idea of how any potential dispute, using the examples of the long haul or short haul EAs, like, do we have any sort of examples? And I know that recently there was a Cleanaway case, and I'm wondering if that's helpful, or is that more comparing apples with oranges?
Now, look, the Cleanaway case is I think helpful in the sense that it helps us understand how the full bench of the commission may view these things and may arbitrate, but not necessarily helpful for pilots if we end up in intractable bargaining. Right. You know what I mean? So it illuminates what might happen, but it's not necessarily helpful for us. So in the Cleanaway case, you've got workers working in a waste depot and working on garbage trucks. So basically garbage, right?
Yep.
And first of all, there was long, intractable negotiations. There was industrial action. But in the end, what it came down, they did get 23% wage increase over 4 years, right?
Yep.
So you look at that, you go, well, that's good, right? And it is good. But the commission, in making those awards, took into account the evidence and the voluminous evidence that was led by the Transport Workers Union about how their members, so they had Cleanaway workers say, I work full time, I even work on weekends or do a bit of overtime, and I'm having trouble affording enough food to put on my family's table.
Yep.
3 meals a day. And there was evidence about how their enterprise bargaining rates were only just above the award rates and just above the minimum wage. And so they were able to lead that evidence, and the Fair Work Commission made findings relying on that evidence to provide them with these, substantive pay increases as a function of the intractable bargaining arbitration. Obviously, if pilots were to end up, so say the short haul EA was to end up in the intractable bargaining process, we would not be able to lead that same evidence. And so the commission would not be able to rely on that evidence to award those types of increases. Now, I'm not saying that they wouldn't award any increases. They would award increases, no doubt. And there is, under the intractable bargaining, there is a provision that says that the commission can't arbitrate conditions that are lower than the existing agreement conditions.
Yep.
Right? So that's good safe, you know, that's a good safety net. But if you had to ask me, you know, if sitting here now I had to predict the future when we had gone into intractable bargaining for the short haul enterprise agreement, if you had to ask me what do you think would happen, Matt, I would say we would get pay increases of 3-4% awarded, you know, probably one backdated a little bit. So you've got to weigh that up. You know, we're not going to get 6%. I can guarantee you we're not going to get 6%. So that's a decision for people to make.
I'm interested now that obviously APA's COM has agreed to the revised deal. If we ended up all the way to the point of intractable bargaining in the Fair Work Commission, what could we expect to occur?
Well, the first thing is that you are giving away the opportunity for a negotiated outcome where you get to use your bargaining power. You're giving that away and you're handing it to a third party, which is the Fair Work Commission. So we no longer have control of the outcome. And that's something that, you know, people should think about seriously about whether or not they want to go down the road of handing the power from APA to a third party. So that's the first thing that I would say. The second thing is that it's a very legalistic process. So effectively, you will, you know, both parties will spend a lot of resources and, you know, up to 6 to 12 months arguing in the commission and then putting forward various evidence. So we'd have to go and obtain statements from people. They would then have to be prepared to come and be witnesses. And we would put on evidence and make submissions about why the Fair Work Commission should, you know, prefer our position. But of course, Qantas will be on the other side, putting on evidence and making submissions about why the Fair Work Commission should prefer their preferred outcome. So again, you lose control.
Now, in terms of my understanding is that, you know, one of the big things that occurs there is trying to determine agreed terms. So, and can you explain, because APA has now endorsed the deal, does that go some way to making what was this proposed deal more likely to be the agreed terms, or is that still up for debate if it went to the Fair Work Commission?
Yeah, it still is absolutely up for debate. But if you followed, if you followed the network aviation decision, you would say the fact that the COM has agreed to endorse the in principle agreement, that there's more chance that they will be considered agreed items. But if you take the network aviation decision, they went one step further. So not only did they agree the in principle agreement or endorse the in principle agreement, but they agreed a comprehensive agreement, and that agreement was then put to the pilots. And the pilots voted down that agreement. So there's a moment in time, if you like, where the commission has looked at whether there was a meeting of minds, which is the test for agreed items. And they've said, right, at that date, when all of the agreed items were put in that enterprise agreement, draft enterprise agreement for approval, then that's the time when there was a meeting of the minds. And then what happened was is that it was voted down, there was industrial action, and then the relevant unions put on new claims as a result of going back to their members, because the members voted it down. They went and put on new claims, and those new claims are now the matters that are going to be determined by the Fair Work Commission in the network aviation matter.
So my understanding of that then is that potentially then this revised deal may become sort of, I guess, a new floor from which anything at IBD would then be negotiated. But my understanding as well is that both sides can still show up with a crowbar to try and sort of pry open other elements of the contract as well. So I guess one of the things for pilots, which is sacrosanct in short haul, is contactability. Is it fair to say that everything is still actually on the table, that both sides can basically try and throw everything at it to try and pry open other parts of the agreement?
Well, just like in the network matter, where the unions, after the agreement was voted down or after the agreement was reached, the unions put on new claims, and they are now the new claims that are going to be arbitrated. Qantas is entitled to do the same thing. So Qantas is able to, you know, after the agreement falls down or is voted down, to put on new claims. And then those new claims are likely to be arbitrated by the Fair Work Commission, if you follow the network example. So yes, they can put on new claims. That doesn't mean that they'll succeed in the new claims, but they will put on a whole lot of evidence. And of course, they've got the resources to absolutely throw everything at this. They'll put on a whole lot of evidence. They'll make submissions. We'll do the same. We'll put resources into this. We'll put on a whole lot of evidence saying the commission should not arbitrate in favour of Qantas's contactability proposals. And then the commission will make the decision. So yes, it can come to it. Doesn't mean it will, but it can.
Now, I know one of the things that obviously bothers, I think, everyone is the pay freeze concept. And if this was to go to arbitration, is the Fair Work Commission likely to overturn the pay freeze? And if they did, would we still then likely get all of the other benefits that are currently in this proposed deal?
So there is no doubt that Qantas will advocate very strongly for the commission to maintain their pay freeze. And the way that they will do that is they will point to the fact that this is a well-known policy, that it applies to all employees across Qantas, and that any move by the Fair Work Commission to break or to pierce the wage freeze policy will result in maximum economic damage to Qantas because all the other unions will follow. So there's no doubt they will make that very strong submission. They will lead evidence in support of that submission. But that doesn't mean that they'll win the day. I mean, I think if we are back in intractable bargaining, we will be arguing that the Fair Work Commission should pierce the wage freeze policy. And again, it doesn't mean that we'll win those arguments. But I've had a lot of experience with the Fair Work Commission. And, you know, I know where this finishes, and that is straight down the middle. So we will get some, if I had to predict where intractable bargaining would finish, is that we would get some moderate pay increases for the life of the agreement. So 3-4%, if I had to predict.
And in terms of the improvements that are in there, such as the minimum guaranteed hours, patent credit guarantee, pay for reserves, and the DPC 60, are they likely to stay in there as well, or is there a risk that they would be cast to the side?
No, they will. So if they are determined to be agreed items by the Fair Work Commission, then yes, they will stay. If they're not determined to be agreed items by the Fair Work Commission, then Qantas will make submissions about why we shouldn't get the pay increases plus all of the structural changes as well.
And given the network case, does that create case law, or is every case viewed in an individual circumstance in terms of they are separate?
Well, it's both, isn't it? You know, what it says is very upfront that every case is decided on its facts alone, right? But there's no doubt that it is good guidance for how the commission is likely to deal with certain facts. And so the facts of the network aviation matter will be different. They always are. There are always different facts to each case. But if the facts were similar, then it's most likely that the Fair Work Commission will, you know, deal with it in a similar manner. In relation to the question about, you know, agreed, because this is key, right? Agreed items. I think as a matter of public policy, the commission is going to try and avoid, you know, opening up too many items for them to arbitrate, because obviously that would just slow, you know, the system will just grind to a halt. But that said, the UFU case, the firefighters union case, talks about the state government being the ultimate decision maker, and talks about this state government having a well-known policy of a wage freeze. So no doubt Qantas will argue that these circumstances are more like the firefighters union circumstances, and therefore the wage freeze policy should be adhered to. There's no doubt they'll argue that.
And it feels to me, even if we do put aside the agreed items, and as I said, that ability for both sides to then try and pry open other parts of the agreement, as well as Qantas then trying to defend the wage policy, that strikes me as time consuming. Like, in terms of when would you, and I know this is crystal balling, but let's say that, you know, we get a no vote in September, and I'll ask you in a minute about how it would uplift potentially, but in terms of time frame, are we talking 12 months, 18 months? What's your guess on that?
Oh, look, I would say, you know, we're not even there. We've got to get through we've got to meet the minimum criteria for making an intractable bargaining application. But if, say, that was to happen, you know, in 3 months' time, then I would say most likely you wouldn't be expecting to get any pay increases until 12 months from that date.
Okay. So in terms of that, the threshold to elevate this to the Fair Work Commission, initially even for, say, conciliation before you then took the steps towards intractable bargaining, what are the thresholds or the benchmarks that you need to pass before you can actually go down that path?
Yeah, so you have to have been bargaining for a minimum of 9 months. So we've met that requirement.
Yep.
Already. So that's ticked off. You have to make an application under Section 240 of the Fair Work Act for conciliation. And we would do that. And we expect that that will happen as a matter of course anyway, if we can't reach agreement. So that has to happen. And then there has to be conciliation programmed under that application. And then the commission has to decide that there are no reasonable prospects of agreement being reached. And how does the commission decide that? Well, it looks at all the facts. And so it will consider, you know, how much negotiation has happened? What are the issues that are between the parties? Has there been a stalemate? Have you taken the advantage of the conciliation? And then also ultimately, whether or not there's been protracted industrial action occurring. And so all of those things will feed into the commission's decision as to whether or not there are no reasonable prospects of agreement being reached. And then the commission says, all right, well, I'm going to take into account all the circumstances and make the declaration. So those are the threshold, if you like, in order for a declaration to be made.
And we've been discussing, obviously, the network dispute a fair bit. And I know a lot of people are sort of viewing that as, I guess, almost like, you know, they're the canary in the mine for the sort of short haul or long haul in terms of everyone's very, very carefully watching that. Can we expect visibility on, I guess, how that story ends before we're going to have a vote in 6 weeks' time?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I mean, that the network aviation decision is a preliminary decision in relation to the question as to what are agreed items, which is obviously a key question to be answered. But now the full arbitration has to occur. So we're just tooling up for that as we speak. So that's going to be, you know, 6 months before... 6 months before any decision is handed down.
Okay. So, yeah, that's got a fair way to go. All right. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
So I guess that's it. I'm guessing if people are listening to this, they're probably frustrated by that idea, but that's the rule set and that's the oval that you're, the landscape that you're, that we're playing in. That's so, because I think there's a bit of a perception that, you know, that the new Fair Work rules maybe, you know, tilted the playing field in favour of the employee. But based on what you're sort of explaining, there's still a significant risk associated with uplifting anything to the Fair Work Commission from a bargaining perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's the thing, like if your bargaining power is strong, then do not look to arbitration because you are always going to get a better deal through negotiation and using your bargaining power. The clean away workers, bargaining power was not strong. That's why they went to arbitration. So the Fair Work Commission has been, you know, operating in various forms for, you know, 120 years. And they almost always use what, you know, the practitioners called the sword of Damocles, which is they come down right in the middle. They split it 50-50.
Right?
They hear your side and they hear the other side. And then they say, here's our decision. And it's bang in the middle. So if you want an outcome that's bang in the middle, then, yeah, arbitration's a good option. But my view would be is that because of pilots' bargaining power, they're better off negotiating the outcomes and locking them away through negotiation.
So you make reference to us having strong bargaining power. I'm curious what you mean by that. And I think potentially some of the listeners may disagree, thinking that the negotiated outcome isn't what they expected. But is it fair to say that, you know, outcomes in the room are indicative of what's achievable?
Yeah. So look, bargaining power is the power that we have as a union, as a collective, to influence Qantas's decisions in the day-to-day, but also in relation to what they'll agree to contain in an enterprise agreement. Now, I think that APA has great bargaining power because, first of all, I look at the existing enterprise agreements and they are of a sort that there's probably only, less than five similar agreements in all of Australia. So they are very strong pro-pilot enterprise agreements that place a lot of restrictions on Qantas and how Qantas can act. That is not necessarily the case for the majority of enterprise agreements around the country. So I look at those agreements and I say, yep, APA has really good bargaining power. Now, the thing with bargaining power is that it's subject to a whole lot of variables. So it goes up and down. So, for example, if we were to, get through this whole process and engage in industrial action, which, unions and workers can do, but our industrial action was less than successful or ran out of steam, then our bargaining power would be much reduced at that point because we'd taken our one shot and we hadn't really made it work. So from a bargaining power perspective, bargaining power is variable, but it is built up over a lot of time, but it's subject to a lot of variables, so it can change. It's fluid. That said, one way to maintain your bargaining power is to lock away the improvements you get each time you bargain. And that's what's worked for pilots thus far, is that after, 10 rounds of bargaining, they have a very comprehensive, very strong enterprise agreement. And so arguably, locking away the structural change that's been offered by Qantas in the short haul agreement is going to continue along that path. You're going to lock away, those changes. Sure, the wage freeze policy's, still in place. Sure, did we get every thing we wanted from a wage increase perspective? No, we didn't. But are we better off locking in those incremental changes and then continuing the fight next time round? Most likely, most likely. I'm predicting the future.
No. But it's. I think the thing is, it's an interesting perspective because I think a lot of everyone sort of has a bit of a half information of actually what they understand it. And again, I'm sure people are listening, going, "Oh, well, you guys are just trying to scare us away from that." And it's not about scaring anyone away from anything. It's about actually trying to inform people of the risks of any course of action, and just making sure that people are informed of those risks so that when they have to make various decisions along any industrial path, they have a clear understanding of all of those risks so they can make informed decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't get into the scaring people or taking a view one way or the other. All I do is make sure that, for example, the Committee of Management through our webinars or the members, the pilots who get to vote on any enterprise agreement, have all of the available information in front of them, and then they can make their best decision.
Is it? I mean, one of the things for me is, and I've lived it too. So the way we've been treated by the past 15 years, we then had COVID. We've got then the profits that are coming off it. Everything, even the board members taking pay rises. I think that's created a sense this time that, we as pilots should be able to get whatever we want, particularly with that wage freeze as well. I think, that pilots think that we should be able to basically just, run the table in the negotiating room and get whatever we want. Maybe that's built off an emotional response. In practicality, is that a reasonable expectation?
Look, I mean, you could ask for everything you want, and if Qantas agrees to it, then you can get everything you want. But of course, they don't. And so, one of the things that I've learned over, many, many decades of bargaining is that you only get something through bargaining when you reach agreement. If you don't reach agreement, you don't get anything. And so that's why the successful, incremental approach works, because each time you bargain and then you reach agreement, you lock it in by including it in an enterprise agreement. The plan is to, just be angry, which I understand, but if the plan is just to be angry and never reach agreement or unlikely to reach agreement, then I don't think that's a good plan, because you only lock things away when you reach agreement. You've got to reach agreement in order to get the benefits.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good advice. And as I said, I think that's a really interesting insight from you, Matt. So I really appreciate your time today. That's it for today. Thanks for everyone for listening in and joining us. We'll be back with another podcast soon. In the meantime, fly safe and stick with it.